If that means it has to be a terrestrial organism, show me where it fits into the scheme of things, and where to look for its mates. And quit jumping to conclusions, I want facts. The biologist stiffened. You'll get them. Get going. Wait. Don't use more of it than necessary for your investigations. I need the major portion as evidence. And don't persist in the silly assumption that the thing is dead. That perfume may be a protective weapon. That thing, if alive, is fantastically dangerous. If it gets on one of your laboratory men, I'll almost certainly have to kill him. The lab director said nothing more, but he left without some of his cockiness. The old man settled back into his chair, sighed, and closed his eyes. He seemed to have gone to sleep. Mary and I kept quiet. After 5 minutes or so, he opened his eyes, looked at me, and said, "How many mustard plasters the size of that thing Doc just carted out of here can arrive in a spaceship as big as that fraud we looked at?" "Was there a spaceship?" I asked. "The evidence seems slim." "Slim, but utterly incontrovertible. There was a ship. There still is a ship. We should have examined the site. That site would have been our last site. The other six boys weren't fools. Answer my question." "I can't. How big the ship was doesn't tell me anything about its payload, when I don't know its propulsion method, the jump it made, or what supply load the passengers require. It's a case of how long is a piece of rope? If you want a horseback guess, I'd say several hundred, maybe several thousand." Yes. So there are several hundred, maybe, several thousand zombies in the state of Iowa tonight. Or harem guards, as Mary puts it." He thought for a moment. "But how am I to get past them to the harem? We can't go around shooting every round-shouldered man in Iowa. It would cause talk." He smiled feebly. "I'll put you another question with no answer," I said. "If one spaceship lands in Iowa yesterday, how many will land in North Dakota tomorrow? Or in Brazil?" "Yes, there's that." He looked still more troubled. "I'll answer it by telling you how long is your piece of rope."
"Huh?"
"Long enough to choke you to death. You kids go wash up and enjoy yourselves. You may not have another chance. Don't leave the offices." I went back to cosmetics, got my own skin color back, and in general resumed my normal appearance. Had a soak and a massage, and then went to the staff lounge in search of a drink and some company. I looked around, not knowing whether I was looking for a blonde, brunette, or redhead, but feeling fairly sure that I could spot the right chassis. It was a redhead. Mary was in the booth, sucking on a drink and looking much as she had looked when she was introduced to me as my sister. "Hi, Sis," I said, sliding in beside her. She smiled and answered, "Hello, bud. Drag up a rock," while moving to make room for me. I dialed for bourbon and water, which I needed for medicinal purposes, and then said, "Is this your real appearance?" She shook her head. "Not at all. Zebra stripes and two heads. What's yours?" "My mother smothered me with a pillow the first time she saw me, so I never got a chance to find out." She again looked me over with that side of beef scrutiny, then said, "I can understand her actions, but I am probably more hardened than she was. You'll do, bud." "Thanks," I went on. "Let's drop this bud and sis routine. I find it gives me inhibitions." "I think you need inhibitions." "Me? Not at all. Never any violence with me. I'm more the Barkus is willing type." I might have added that if I laid a hand on her and she happened not to like it, I bet that I would draw back a bloody stump. The old man's kids are never sissies. She smiled. So? Well, note it down that Miss Barkis is not willing. At least not this evening. She put down her glass. Drink up, and let's reorder. We did so. I continued to sit there, feeling warm and good, and for the moment, not worried. There aren't many hours like that, especially in our profession. It makes one savor them. One of the nicest things about Mary was that she did not turn on the sex, except for professional purposes. I think she knew, I'm sure she knew, what a load of it she possessed. But she was too much of a gentleman to use it socially. She kept it turned down low, just enough to keep us both warm and comfortable. While we sat there, not saying much, I got to thinking how well she would look on the other side of a fireplace. My job being what it was, I had never thought seriously about getting married. And after all, a babe is just a babe. Well, I got excited. But Mary was an agent herself. Talking to her would not be like shouting off Echo Mountain. I realized that I had been lonely for one hell of a long time. Mary?
Yes?
Are you married?
Huh?
Why do you ask? As a matter of fact, I'm not. Now. But what business, I mean? Why does it matter?
Well, it might, I persisted.
She shook her head.
I'm serious, I went on.
Look me over. I've got both hands and both feet. I'm fairly young. I don't track mud in the house. You could do worse. She laughed, but her laugh was kindly.
And you could work up better lines than that. I am sure they must have been extemporaneous.
They were. And I won't hold them against you. In fact, I'll forget them. Listen, Wolf. Your technique is down. Just because a woman tells you that she is not going to sleep with you tonight is no reason to lose your head and offer her a contract. Some women would be just mean enough to hold you to it.
I meant it, I said peevishly.
So, what salary do you offer? Damn your pretty eyes. If you want that type of contract, I'll go along. You can keep your pay, and I'll allot half of mine to you, unless you want to retire.
She shook her head.
I didn't mean it. I'd never insist on a settlement contract, not with a man I was willing to marry in the first place.
I didn't think you would.
I was just trying to make you see that you yourself were not serious.
She looked me over soberly.
But perhaps you are, she added in a warm, soft voice.
I am.
She shook her head again. Agents should not marry. You know that. Agents shouldn't marry anyone but agents. She started to answer, but stopped suddenly. My own phone was talking in my ear, the old man's voice, and I knew she was hearing the same thing.
Come into my office, he said.
We both got up without saying anything. Mary stopped me at the door, put a hand on my arm, and looked up into my eyes. That is why it is silly to talk about marriage. We've got this job to finish. All the time we've been talking, you've been thinking about the job, and so have I.
I have not.
Don't play with me. Consider this, Sam. Suppose you were married, and you woke up to find one of those things on your wife's shoulders, possessing her.
There was horror in her eyes as she went on.
Suppose I woke up, and found one of them on your shoulders.
I'll chance it, and I won't let one get to you.
She touched my cheek.
I don't believe you would.
We went on into the old man's office. He looked up just long enough to say, Come along, we're leaving.
Where to? I answered. Or shouldn't I ask?
White House. See the president. Shut up.
I shut.
Three.
At the beginning of a forest fire or an epidemic, there is a short time when a minimum of correct action will contain and destroy. The BW boys express it in exponential equations, but you don't need math to understand it. It depends on early diagnosis and prompt action before the thing gets out of hand. What the president needed to do, the old man had already figured out. Declare a national emergency. Fence off the Des Moines area and shoot anybody who tried to slip out, be it a cocker spaniel or grandma with a cookie jar. Then let them out one at a time, stripping them and searching them for parasites. Meantime, use the radar screen, the rocket boys, and the space stations to spot and smash any new landings. Warn all the other nations, including those behind the curtain. Ask for their help. But don't be fussy about international law, for this is a fight for racial survival against an outside invader. For the moment, it didn't matter where they came from. Mars, Venus, the Jovian satellites, or outside the system entirely. Repel the invasion. The old man had cracked a case, analyzed it, and come up with the right answer in a little more than 24 hours. His unique gift was the ability to reason logically with unfamiliar, hard-to-believe facts as easily as with the commonplace. Not much, huh? I have never met anyone else who could do it wholeheartedly. Most minds stall dead when faced with facts which conflict with basic beliefs. "I just can't believe it" is all one word to highbrows and dimwits alike. But not to the old man, and he had the ear of the president. The Secret Service guards gave us the works, politely. An X-ray went beep, and I surrendered my heater. Mary turned out to be a walking arsenal. The machine gave four beeps and a hiccup, although you would have sworn she couldn't hide a tax receipt under what she was wearing. The old man surrendered his cane without waiting to be asked. I got the notion he didn't want it to be X-rayed. Our audio capsules gave them trouble. They showed up by both X-ray and metal detector, but the guards weren't equipped for surgical operations. There was a hurried conference with the presidential secretary, and the head guard ruled that anything embedded in the flesh need not be classed as a potential weapon. They printed us, photographed our retinas, and ushered us into the waiting room. The old man was whisked out and in to see the president alone. "I wonder why we were brought along," I asked Mary. "The old man knows everything we know." She did not answer, so I spent the time reviewing in my mind the loopholes and the security methods used to guard the president. They do such things much better behind the curtain. An assassin with any talent could have beaten our safeguards with ease. I got to feeling indignant about it. After a while, we were ushered in. I found I had stage fright so badly I was stumbling over my feet. The old man introduced us, and I stammered. Mary just bowed. The president said he was glad to see us and turned on that smile, the way you see it in the stereo casts, and he made us feel that he was glad to see us. I felt all warm inside and no longer embarrassed, and no longer worried. The president, with the old man's help, would take action, and the dirty horror we had seen would be cleaned up. The old man directed me to report all that I had done and seen and heard on this assignment. I made it brief but complete. I tried to catch his eye when it came to the part about killing Barnes, but he wasn't having any. So I left out the old man's order to shoot and made it clear that I had shot to protect another agent, Mary, when I saw Barnes reach for his gun. The old man interrupted me. "Make your report complete." So I filled in the old man's order to shoot. The president threw the old man a glance at the correction, the only expression he showed. I went on about the parasite thing. Went on, in fact, up to the present moment, as nobody told me to stop. Then it was Mary's turn. She fumbled in trying to explain to the president why she expected to get some sort of response out of normal men and had not gotten it out of the McLean boys, the state sergeant, and Barnes. The president helped her by smiling warmly, managing to bow without getting up, and saying, "My dear young lady, I quite believe it." Mary blushed, then went on. The president listened gravely while she finished. He asked a couple of questions, then sat still for several minutes. Presently, he looked up and spoke to the old man. "Andrew," he said, "your section has been invaluable. On at least two occasions, your reports have tipped the balance in crucial occasions in history." The old man snorted. "So it's no, is it?" "I didn't say so." "You were about to." The president shrugged. "I was going to suggest that your young people withdraw, but now it doesn't matter. Andrew, you are a genius, but even geniuses make mistakes. They overwork themselves and lose their judgment. I'm not a genius, but I learned to relax about 40 years ago. How long has it been since you had a vacation?" "Damn your vacations. See here, Tom, I anticipated this. That's why I brought witnesses. They are neither drugged nor instructed. Call on your psych crew. Try to shake their stories." The president shook his head. "You wouldn't have brought witnesses who could be cracked. I'm sure you are cleverer about such things than anyone whom I could bring in to test them. Take this young man. He was willing to risk a murder charge to protect you. You inspire loyalty, Andrew. As for the young lady, really, Andrew, I can't start what amounts to a war on a woman's intuition." Mary took a step forward. "Mr. President," she said very earnestly, "I do know. I know every time. I can't tell you how I know, but those were not normal male men." He hesitated, then answered, "I do not dispute you. But you have not considered an obvious explanation, that they actually were, harem guards. Pardon me, miss. There are always such unfortunates in the population. By the laws of chance, you ran across 4 in one day." Mary shut up. The old man did not. "God damn it, Tom." I shuddered. "You do not talk to the president that way." "I knew you when you were an investigating senator, and I was a key man in your investigations. You know I wouldn't bring you this fairy tale if there were any way to explain it away. Facts can't be ignored. They've got to be destroyed or faced up to. How about that spaceship? What was in it? Why couldn't I even reach the spot where it landed?" He hauled out the photograph taken by Space Station Beta and shoved it under the president's nose. The president seemed unperturbed. "Ah, yes, facts. Andrew, both you and I have a passion for facts, but I have several sources of information other than your section. Take this photo. You made quite a point of it when you phoned. I've checked the matter. The meets and bounds of the McLean farm, as recorded in the local county courthouse, check precisely with the triangulated latitude and longitude of this object on this photograph." The president looked up. "Once, I absent-mindedly turned off a block too soon and got lost in my own neighborhood." "You weren't even in your own neighborhood, Andrew." "Tom." "Yes, Andrew." "You did not trot out there and check those courthouse maps yourself." "Of course not." "Thank God for that, or you would be carrying 3 pounds of pulsating tapioca between your shoulder blades this minute, and God save the United States. You can be sure of this. The courthouse clerk and whatever agent was sent to see him, both are hag-ridden by filthy parasites this very moment." The old man stared at the ceiling. "Yes, and the Des Moines chief of police, newspaper editors around there, dispatchers, cops, all sorts of key people. Tom, I don't know what we're up against, but they know what we are, and they are pinching off the nerve cells of our social organism before true messages can get back, or they cover up the true reports with false ones, just as they did with Barnes. Mr. President, You must order an immediate, drastic quarantine of the whole area. There is no other hope.
Barnes, the president repeated softly, as if he had heard nothing else.
Andrew, I had hoped to spare you this, but...
He broke off and flipped a key at his desk.
Get me stereo station WDES, Des Moines, the manager's office.
Shortly a screen lighted on his desk. He touched another switch, and a solid display in the wall lighted up. We were looking into the room we had been in only a few hours before.
Looking into it past the shoulders of a man who filled most of the screen,
Barnes.
Or his twin. When I kill a man, I expect him to stay dead. I was shaken, but I still believed in myself and my heater.
The man in the display said, "You asked for me, Mr. President?"
He sounded as if he were dazzled by the honor.
"Yes, thank you. Mr. Barnes, do you recognize any of these people?"
He looked surprised.
"I'm afraid not, should I?"
The old man interrupted. "Tell him to call in his office force."
The president looked quizzical, but did just that.
Barnes looked puzzled, but complied.
They trooped in. Girls, mostly. And I recognized the secretary who sat outside the manager's office. One of them squealed, "Oh, it's the president." And they all fell to buzzing.
None of them identified us. Not surprising with the old man and me, but Mary's appearance was just as it had been in the same office. And I will bet that Mary's looks would be burned into the mind of any woman who had ever seen her.
But I noticed one thing about them. Every single one of them was round-shouldered.
The president eased us out. He put a hand on the old man's shoulder.
"Seriously, Andrew, take that vacation." He flashed the famous smile. "The Republic won't fall. I'll worry it through till you get back."
10 minutes later, we were standing in the wind on the Rock Creek platform. The old man seemed shrunken, and for the first time, old.
"What now, boss?"
"Huh?"
"For you two, nothing. You are both on leave until we're called."
"I'd like to take another look at Barnes' office."
"Don't go near the place. Stay out of Iowa. That's an order."
"What are you going to do, if I may ask?"
"You heard the president, didn't you? I am going down to Florida and lie in the sun and wait for the world to go to hell. If you have any sense, you'll do the same. There's damn little time."
He squared his shoulders and stumped away. I turned to speak to Mary, but she was gone. His advice seemed awfully good. And it had suddenly occurred to me that waiting for the end of the world might not be too bad, with her help. I looked around quickly, but could not spot her. I trotted off and overtook the old man.
"Excuse me, boss, where did Mary go?"
"Huh?"
"On leave, no doubt. Don't bother me."
I considered trying to relay to her through the section circuit when I remembered that I did not know her right name, nor her code, nor her ID number. I thought of trying to bullet through by describing her, but that was foolish. Only Cosmetics Records knows the original appearance of an agent, and they won't talk. All I knew about her was that she had twice appeared as a redhead, at least once by choice, and that for my taste. She was why men fight. Try punching that into a phone. Instead, I found a room for the night. After I found it, I wondered why I had not left the Capitol and gone back to my own apartment. Then I wondered if the blonde were still in it. Then I wondered who the blonde was, anyway. Then I went to sleep.
Four.
I woke up at dusk. The room I was in had a real window. The section pays well, and I could afford little luxuries. I looked out over the capital as it came to life for the night. The river swept away in a wide bend past the memorial. It was summer, and they were adding fluorescein to the water above the district, so the river stood out in curving sweeps of glowing rose and amber and emerald and shining fire. Little pleasure boats cut through the colors, each filled, I had no doubt, with couples up to no good and enjoying it. On the land, here and there among the older buildings, the bubble domes were lighting up, giving the city a glowing fairyland look. Off to the east, where the bomb had landed, there were no old buildings at all, and the area was an Easter basket of color. Giant Easter eggs, lighted from within. I've seen the Capitol at night oftener than most, because of my business, and while I liked the place, I had not much thought about it. But tonight I had that last ride together feeling. It was so beautiful it hurt. But it was not its beauty that choked me up. It was knowing that down under those warm lights were people, alive and individual people, going about their lawful occasions, making love or having spats, whichever suited them, doing whatever they damn well pleased, each under his own vine and his own fig tree, with nobody to make him afraid, as it says. I thought about all those gentle, kindly people, with only an occasional heel, and I thought about them each with a gray slug clinging to the back of his neck, twitching his legs and arms, making his voice say what the slug wished, going where the slug wanted to go. Hell's bells. Life under the commissars couldn't be that bad. I know. I've been behind the curtain. I made myself a solemn promise. If the parasites won, I'd arrange to be dead before I would let one of those things ride me the way it had ridden Barnes. For an agent, it would be simple. Just bite my nails. Or, if your hands happened to be off, there were a couple of other ways. The old man planned for all professional necessities. But the old man had not planned such arrangements for such a purpose, and I knew it. It was the old man's business and mine to keep those people down there safe, not to run out on them when the going got rough. I turned away from the window. There was not a confounded thing I could do about it now. I decided that what I needed was company. The room contained the usual catalog of escort bureaus and model agencies that you'll find in almost any big hotel except maybe the Martha Washington. I thumbed through it, looking the girls over, then slammed it shut. I didn't want a whoopee girl. I wanted one particular girl, one who would as soon shoot as shake hands, and would bite in the clinches. And I didn't know where she had gone. I always carry a tube of Tempest Fugit pills. Most agents do, as one never knows when giving your reflexes a jolt will get you through a tight spot. Despite the scare propaganda, Tempest pills are not habit-forming, not the way the original hashish is. Nevertheless, a purist would say I was addicted to them, for I had the habit of taking them occasionally to make a 24-hour leave seem like a week. I admit that I enjoyed the mild euphoria which the pills induced as a side effect. Primarily, though, they just stretch out your subjective time by a factor of 10 or more. Chop time into finer bits so that you live longer for the same amount of clock and calendar. What's wrong with that? Sure, I know the horrible example story of a man who died of old age in a calendar month through taking the pills steadily. But I took them only once in a while. Maybe he had the right idea. He lived a long and happy life. You can be sure it was happy, and died happily in the end. What matter that the sun rose only 30 times? He was keeping score. And what are the rules, anyhow? I sat there, staring at my tube of pills, and thinking that I had enough to keep me hopped up and content for what would be, to me, at least 2 years. If I wanted to, I could crawl in my hole and pull it in after me. I took out 2 pills and got a glass of water. Then I put them carefully back in the tube, put on my gun and phone, left the hotel and headed for the Library of Congress. On the way, I stopped in a bar for a quick one and looked at the newscast. There was no news from Iowa, but when is there any news from Iowa? At the library, I went to the general catalog, put on blinkers, and started scanning for references. Flying saucers led to flying discs, then to Project Saucer, then lights in the sky, fireballs, cosmic diffusion theory of life origins, and 2 dozen blind alleys and screwball branches of literature. I needed some sort of a Geiger counter to tell me what was pay dirt and what was not, especially as what I wanted was almost certain to carry a semantic content code key, classing it somewhere between Aesop's fables and the Lost Continent myths. Nevertheless, in an hour, I had a double handful of selector cards. I handed them to the vestal virgin at the desk and waited while she fed them into the hopper. Presently, she said, "Most of the films you want are in use. The rest will be delivered to study room 9A. Take the south escalator, please." Room 9A had one occupant, who looked up as I came in and said, "Well, the wolf in person. How did you manage to pick me up again? I could swear I gave you a clean miss." I said, "Hello, Mary." "Hello," she answered. "And now goodbye. Miss Barkus still ain't willing, and I've got work to do." I got annoyed. "Listen, you can see the little twerp. Odd as it may seem to you, I didn't come here looking for your no-doubt beautiful white body. I occasionally do some work myself, and that is why I'm here. If you will put up with my unwelcome presence until my spools arrive, I'll get the hell out and find another study room. A stag one." Instead of flaring back, she immediately softened, thereby proving that she was more of a gentleman than I was. "I'm sorry, Sam. A woman hears the same thing so many thousand times that she gets to thinking that no other topic is possible. Sit down." "No," I answered. "Thanks, but I'll take my spools to an unoccupied room. I really do want to work." "Stay here," she insisted. "Read that notice on the wall. If you remove spools from the room to which they are delivered, you will not only cause the sorter to blow a dozen tubes, but you'll give the chief reference librarian a nervous breakdown." "I'll bring them back when I'm through with them." She took my arm, and warm tingles went up it. "Please, Sam, I'm sorry." I sat down and grinned at her. Nothing could persuade me to leave. I did not expect to find you here, but now that I have, I don't intend to let you out of my sight until I know your phone code, your home address, and the true color of your hair. "Wolf," she said softly, wrinkling her nose. "You'll never know any of them." She made a great business of fitting her head back into her study machine while ignoring me, but I could see that she was not displeased. The delivery tube went thunk, and my spools spilled into the basket. I gathered them up and stacked them on the table by the other machine. One of them rolled over against the ones Mary had stacked up and knocked them down. Mary looked up. I picked up what I thought was my spool and glanced at the end. The wrong end, as all it held was the serial number and that little pattern of dots which the selector reads. I turned it over, read the label, and placed it in my pile. "Hey," said Mary, "that's mine." "In a pig's eye," I said politely. "But it is. I read the label when it was faced toward me. It's the one I want next." Sooner or later, I can see the obvious. Mary wouldn't be there to study the history of footgear through the Middle Ages. I picked up 3 or 4 more of hers and read the labels. So that's why nothing I wanted was in, I said.
But you didn't do a thorough job. I found some that you missed.
I handed her my selection. Mary looked them over, then pushed all the spools into a single pile.
Shall we split them 50-50?
Or both of us see them all?
50-50 to weed out the junk. Then we'll both go over the remainder, I decided.
Let's get busy.
After even having seen the parasite on poor Barnes's back, even after being solemnly assured by the old man that a flying saucer had in fact landed, I was not prepared for the monumental pile of evidence to be found buried in a public library. A pest on Digby and his evaluating formula. Digby was a fluxinosa nihilopilificator at heart, which is an $8 word meaning a joker who does not believe in anything he can't bite. The evidence was unmistakable. Earth had been visited by ships from outer space not once, but many times. The reports long antedated our own achievement of space travel. Some of them ran back into the 17th century. Earlier than that, but it was impossible to judge the quality of reports dating back to a time when science meant an appeal to Aristotle. The first systematic data came from the United States itself in the 1940s and 50s. The next flurry was in the 80s, mostly from Russia-Siberia. These reports were difficult to judge, as there was no direct evidence from our own intelligence agents, and anything that came from behind the curtain was usually phony, ipso facto. I noticed something and started taking down dates. Strange objects in the sky appeared to hit a cycle with crests at 30-year intervals, about. I made a note about it. A statistical analyst might make something of it. Or more likely, if I fed it to the old man, he would see something in that crystal ball he uses for a brain. Flying saucers were tied in with mysterious disappearances, not only through being in the same category as sea serpents, bloody rain, and such like wild data, but also because in at least 3 well-documented instances, pilots had chased saucers and never come back. Or down, anywhere, i.e., officially classed as crashed in wild country and not recovered. An easy out or happy hurdle type of explanation. I got another wild hunch and tried to see whether or not there was a 30-year cycle in mysterious disappearances. And if so, did it phase match the objects in the sky cycle? There seemed to be, but I could not be sure. Too much data, and not enough fluctuation. There are too many people disappearing every year for other reasons, from amnesia to mothers-in-law. But vital records have been kept for a long time, and not all were lost in the bombings. I noted it down to farm out for professional analysis. The fact that groups of reports seemed to be geographically or even politically concentrated, I did not try very hard to understand. I tabled it, after trying one hunch hypothesis on for size. Put yourself in the invader's place. If you were scouting a strange planet, you would study all of it equally, or you would pick out areas that looked interesting by whatever standards you had and then concentrate. It was just a guess, and I was ready to chuck it before breakfast, if necessary. Mary and I did not exchange 3 words all night. Eventually, we got up and stretched. Then I let Mary change to pay the machine for the spools of notes she had taken. Why don't women carry change? And I got my wires out of Hawk, too. Well, what's the verdict? I asked. I feel like a sparrow who has built a nice nest and discovers that it is in a rain spout. I recited the old jingle, and we'll do the same thing, refuse to learn, and build again in the spout. Oh no. Sam, we've got to do something, fast. The president has to be convinced. It makes a full pattern. This time, they are moving in to stay. Could be. In fact, I think they are.
Well, what do we do?
Honey child, you are about to learn that in the country of the blind, the one-eyed man is in for a hell of a rough ride. Don't be cynical, there isn't time.
No, there isn't.
Gather up your gear and let's get out of here. Dawn was on us after we left, and the big library was almost deserted. I said, tell you what, let's find a barrel of beer, take it to my hotel room, bust in the head, and talk this thing over. She shook her head. Not in your hotel room. Damn it, this is business. Let's go to my apartment. It's only a couple of 100 miles away. I'll fix you breakfast when we get there. I recalled my basic purpose in life in time to remember to leer. That's the best offer I've had all night. But seriously, why not the hotel? We'd get breakfast there and save it a half hour's travel. You don't want to come to my apartment? I won't bite you. I was hoping you would, so I could bite back. No, I was just wondering why the sudden switch. Well, perhaps I wanted to show you the bear traps I have arranged tastefully around my bed. Or perhaps I just wanted to prove to you I could cook. She dimpled for a moment. I flagged a taxi, and we went to her apartment. When we got inside, she left me standing, while she made a careful search of the place. Then came back and said, turn around, I want to feel your back. Why do... turn around. I shut up and did so. She gave it a good knuckling, all over, then said, now you can feel mine. With pleasure. Nevertheless, I did a proper job, for I saw what she was driving at. There was nothing under her clothes but girl. Girl and assorted items of lethal hardware. She turned around and let a deep sigh. That's why I didn't want to go to your hotel room. Now we're safe. Now I know we are safe for the first time since I saw that thing on the station manager's back. This apartment is tight. I turn off the air and leave it sealed like a vault every time I leave it. Say, how about the air conditioning? Could one get through the ducts?